And then there were two, and what a grand final we have in prospect this weekend. And joining us here at League Express Towers this week to help preview it, we're joined by Mr. Alex Davis.
Good morning.
Matthew Shaw
morning.
Is here. And Martin Sadler.
Good morning.
Listen to that, by the way, how happy you are.
Right, it's exciting, isn't it?
I know, it's like the end of the season,
it's
nearly
like
here.
It's the most exciting grand final that I can recall, this one.
Well, potentially, let's hope it is. It's going to really be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely. And, well, an interesting show ahead, hopefully. So, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show, as well as a preview for this Saturday's grand final between Salford and St Helens at Old Trafford. Later, we're going to be joined by Phil Hodgson, League Express Amateur Game Oracle, to discuss all those grand finals across the amateur game from last weekend and beyond. We've also got Lorraine Marsden coming on to help us preview the women's grand final. But before that, there's only one place we can start, and that is to Salford and their match with Wigan last week. Bang! That was amazing, wasn't it?
Grand final winners 2019, Ben.
Are we going that far? Because we've been predicting Salford would be in the grand final, I think, since June. I think
it's going a bit far to think that Salford will beat St Helens. And certainly if they do beat them, they won't beat them like they beat
Tell
Wigan.
You what, Martin, we'll put a bet on. And I can't lose this because I work more hours than I should anyway. If they win, I get an extra day's holiday.
Well,
and if not, I'll what's it called?
I'll be honest. Martin, I'll be honest. I think you have to take that bet, don't you?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, we'll get to the grand final itself in a second, but just that performance against Wigan.
I think, nobody expected Salford to win that easily, if they expected them to win at all. And I think the key thing for Salford was that they learnt an awful lot from that win against that defeat against Wigan 2 weeks earlier. As I wrote in League Express, if you look back at that game, Salford actually lost that game rather than Wigan winning it. If you remember the mistakes they made that just let Wigan score, they made 12 handling errors in that first game. They only made 2 last Friday night. That was the difference, I think. They played
along,
a control
along with
game.
The fact Wigan probably quadrupled their errors as well.
Well, I also think Wigan were rebounding from a real shellacking by St Helens, 40 points to 10 the previous week. And I think, you know, I think that really affected them and they didn't recover from it. I thought they would do, but they didn't. And I think what that game showed was that Wigan have got these really young kids who are doing so well for them. But ultimately, when they come up against experienced players in a crucial game that means a lot, you can't beat a bit of experience, can you? And I thought Salford showed that.
I'll tell you what I got from the game. Salford, they made Wigan play in a way that they didn't want to play because Wigan were trying to get through in the way that they normally do and weren't able to do that. And that's why their errors quadrupled. And St Helens will have to be careful of that. St Helens will want to play in their way. And if Salford back up against that, then that will be when it's interesting.
91% set completion from Salford. It was all very basic stuff.
But that's what they have to do, because if they try and throw the ball about a bit against St Helens, they will get beat. They need to play like
St Helens playing St Helens game.
They need to make St Helens play like that.
I know this is a bit rich, and you'll roll your eyes when you first hear me say this, but I think that the way Halifax played Saints in the semi-final showed the way to play them. Halifax obviously didn't have the ability to beat them, but they took it to them down the middle.
We can't beat
them. Well, Warrington did at Wembley, didn't they?
They took it to them down the middle, and I think if you can once stifle them, I mean, I people were saying at the time, have you seen Alex Worms have a quieter game than that? You know, against Halifax.
In some ways, when St Helens played Wigan a couple of weeks ago, St Helens took it to them down the middle. Yeah, they ran hard down the middle, and they absolutely dominated.
Yeah, yeah.
So Saints can do that, and that's what makes them a brilliant team. They've got that huge amount of forward potential, but they can also throw the ball.
But you look
back
to the Challenge Cup games, and Martin rightly said Warrington did the same. They took it to them down the middle, and I do think that that is the way to try and maybe just make Saints wobble a little bit.
I think you've got to get on top of them early. If Saints get a couple of tries early
if they score early, I think
that's what Salford did against Wigan, wasn't it?
Exactly.
First chance for points.
And, of course, what St Helens did against Wigan, they got on the board early, they started dominating down the middle, they were running hard, fast, because they got so much confidence.
But I think one of the really interesting things about Saints, obviously they were devastated by the Wembley loss, and I thought that might have a lingering effect on them. You know, when it came to another really big game, they might bottle it again. Because, you know, when you've done it, and they did it in two big games last year as well, didn't they? So the question was, could Saints win a big game when it really matters? And yeah. I think that feeling had communicated itself to the players yeah. when they played Wigan. And they came out determined to show they attacked Wigan really strongly right from the start of that game and were leading 20-odd nil at half-time.
I think what we'll see, if I was betting, that Salford will play a quite constrained game. They'll try and take the back three out of it with the kicking game. They'll kick into touch, they'll slow things down, not let Makinson run the ball back, not let Coote run the ball back or Regan Grace. Because I think what Salford, I think what Saints will try and do is they'll try and exploit them on the edges. Because I think the quicker, the more athletic on the edges than Salford are. So I can see what Wigan will, Saints will try and do, I got there eventually, is just play quicker than everyone else as there's an all year, try and tie the middles out, and then ensure that the inside pressure doesn't come and Salford will catch, and Saints will catch Salford on the edges. I think that's what they'll try and do. I think Salford will try and nullify that by slowing the game down, kicking to touch, taking the back three out.
That's it. Salford will need to slow the game down. If Saints play a quick game, then it's all over.
I was going to say, I mean, how does Salford approach this game? Because, you know, I think it's safe to say everyone connected with Salford are blown away by the fact that they've made the grand final.
Yeah. I think Salford have got to put doubt in St Helens players' minds. I think they ought to be playing a mind game this week.
But do you think they're going to be able to raise their game
That's
again?
That's what Salford
to
have shown grand final. In these last two games that they can do it.
Do you think they are playing mind games? Look, not taking anything away from Jackson Hastings. Is he playing mind games with Johnny Lomax by telling him he's the best player in the competition?
Well, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I like it.
Maybe I'm being cynical.
No.
Because he does come across very humble, Jackson Hastings. But yeah, maybe he is, you know.
Yeah. Well, Johnny Lomax won the Albert Goldthorpe medal, so he's the best player in Super League.
I mean, there's
along with Jackson, of course.
There's many layers to this final, isn't there? I mean, Lachlan Coote has spoken to Aaron about, you know, that Wembley final and how that's going to spur them on. Salford, never been to the grand final, so they're up for this. It is going to be brilliant, isn't it?
You know, I think I'm looking forward to seeing the Salford fans at Old Trafford, if I'm really honest about it.
Well,
they've been great. We called it
a few weeks ago, didn't we, that
yeah.
they would have no problem selling tickets if
I don't think they
Well, Alex, we're just saying that you've just been looking at the
Yeah, they had a map. They had a map of the stadium, and the St Helens end was a little bit more available than the Salford end.
Really? Because at full time on Friday, the St Helens end looked totally sold out.
It's pretty well sold. Yeah. There's one green bit which is very available, but the Salford end is that's pretty much sold
out. So is it nearing a sellout?
Yeah.
Salford seem to think that they'll sell between 12,000 and 15,000.
God, if they could get even half of those guys and women.
Well, they've already sold 8,500, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, just speaking to people that I know that are rugby fans, like, oh, we're going to go to the grand final. And it's like, why are Salford there? We've got to support them. So they've got the neutral interest.
I'll tell you, there's a precedent for this. Salford were last in the Challenge Cup final in 1969 when they played Castleford. And they sold about 20-odd thousand tickets for that game. If you look at that attendance that year, it was one of the biggest attendances in any...
good game as well.
Yeah, Castleford won it, of course. Yeah, it's a bit like people saying Australia when South Sydney get to a final... their fans suddenly turn up from, you know, seen for years.
I know that people were saying, oh, they won't want Salford in the final. I've always disagreed with that. I think Salford making the grand final would actually have a positive impact.
It's a massive selling point. Because
of the proximity as well. It's
Salford's home game, essentially. It's closer to Salford than their actual home stadium.
I mean, you look at last Friday and the crowd was just under 10,000 at Wigan with 4,000 Salford fans.
Yeah.
What's happened to the Wigan fans?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a bit
we,
of a
Well, I think
concern.
I think someone nailed that who we were with yesterday,
right,
Greg Harrison,
absolutely,
on
yeah.
Backchat plug. You know,
Backchat's really worth watching on Thursday with Craig.
To cut a long story short, he said you can't keep selling your best players and expect the fans to keep turning up. And that's what they've done for many years now.
Yeah.
It's gonna be superb. 6 o'clock kickoff, it'll be live on Sky and we'll all be there. Are we all going? We're all going.
Oh, yes.
It's not the only grand final taking place this weekend. Of course, at the Totally Wicked Stadium on Friday night, that will host the women's grand final, and it's Castleford against Leeds. And for more on this, here's Lorraine Marsden. Well, Lorraine, a big thank you for joining us, and let's go with the big semi-final result. Did anyone see this coming? St Helens 14, Leeds Rhinos 18.
Well, I think you can never write off Leeds Rhinos. They've shown both the women's team and the men's team, maybe not this year, but certainly in years gone by, that they know how to win the big games. They can really sort of go into a game knowing that it's one that they have to win, and they will pull the performance out of the bag.
And a very late try, let's say, from Abby Etock. St Helens are going to be gutted with that, aren't they?
Yeah. I think because they lost in sort of similar circumstances to Leeds in the Challenge Cup semi-finals, not the late try, but they were in a winning position and lost it late on. But Abby Etock has been a revelation since she signed a few weeks ago for Leeds. I think when it was the Challenge Cup weekends, I'm fairly sure she was playing for the Army side in the Shield final, and then wow. Leeds have picked her up, and she's really found her feet very quickly in Super League, and is proving to be a great signing for them.
So the Totally Wicked Stadium on Friday won't be hosting St Helens, it'll be hosting Leeds, and it'll be hosting Castleford.
Yes.
Castleford beating Wigan quite convincingly in the end, 34-4, sets up this Challenge Cup final replay, doesn't it?
It does, and Castleford will be hoping it's not a replay of the performance on the day, because I know they were all very disappointed with how they went out and performed that day. Leeds will be hoping for a similar performance and a similar result. Castleford have been in a couple of finals now where things haven't quite gone to plan for them, so they'll be hoping that they've learnt from those mistakes, and they'll have had to learn quite quickly from them. But they'll be going out looking for revenge, and Leeds will be going out looking for the double, so they're both going to be going out there for the win, and certainly going to be an entertaining game.
It's going to be a cracker, isn't it? And it's not the only grand final taking place this weekend. Obviously, that Super League grand final at the Total Wicked Stadium, but the Etihad campus in Sports City in Manchester will be hosting a doubleheader of grand finals. The League One grand final, Keighley Albion against Cutsike, is the morning game, and then in the afternoon, it's Warrington against Barrow Island. What do you think to those two matches?
Again, two great matches in prospect. The two divisions, certainly League One has been a very close division all season. Barrow and Warrington in the Championship have been two really standout teams with some very good players involved. So that promises to be a great game for anyone who fancies heading to Manchester early on Saturday morning.
Definitely get yourself down to Manchester this on Saturday.
Yep.
Those two games there in the Grand Final of the Championship and League One over the lunchtime period on Saturday at the Etihad campus.
Yep.
And get on the tram, go straight to Old Trafford for the main Grand Final. Yep. The Women's Super League Grand Final Friday night, though.
Yep.
Where's it going?
Definitely. Well,
don't sit on the fence, Lorraine. Come on.
It's hard to look past Leeds in there when you look at their previous performances in big games like this. As I've said previously, they always just seem to manage to pull it out of the bag. Castleford themselves have said they sometimes panic a little bit in situations like this. So whoever goes out and really sort of sticks to the game plan will have a great chance of doing it. And definitely a game for anybody to either get over to St Helens for, or the fact that it's on Sky opens it up to a whole new audience, and that is just a massive boost for the game.
So Lorraine Marsden there speaking to us here on the Total Rugby League show about that women's grand final.
Good
this
to
weekend.
Watch that.
Leeds again.
Well, it's the Castleford Leeds hoodoo, isn't it? And both the women and the men's have struggled in the last, what, 5 or 6 years to beat Leeds in
the
grand final.
Well, they've got to do it eventually.
I watched Cass on, I was at the Cass game on Sunday. They were good.
Commiserations to Featherstone, but Toronto in the Championship Grand Final were absolutely superb, weren't they?
They were both
Featherstone were, they were ahead at 55 minutes, weren't they? Until Blake Wallace scored.
It took a good performance from Toronto to win that game.
They didn't panic at all.
Because they knew they were going to break them eventually, but Featherstone, credit to them, they really hung in there.
You felt at half-time that Featherstone could win it, and then the first 10 minutes of the second half, like Alex said, you just felt
it was the first set of the second half. Toronto moved all the way down the field so fast, so brilliant. They almost scored, and it's thought, how are you going to be able to hold them out for the entire game when they're able to go from their own line to their line in the first set of the second half?
And a big crowd as well, Martin.
10,000.
So many cardboard cutouts.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, wasn't it? And the way they go back as well. Into,
and move and drink and consume food.
The crowd looked brilliant. It looked absolutely brilliant.
So that sets up Toronto in Super League next season. Yeah. It was nice of Super League to say they're fine ahead of the game, which is good.
Well, I mean, you know, my God, only to decide in the week leading up to that game that they'd be okay.
Shambles.
But it's good that I'm not asking for a fourth week on the trot, are they going to be okay to go to Super League? God. But that's good.
Yeah.
I spoke to Bob Hunter last week, which I was quite happy with, and he says that he wants to make the Lamport Stadium the best stadium in Super League.
Got some work to do.
Well, oh my gosh, yes, that's a tough one.
But if that's the time.
I mean, I was wondering whether they were ever going to move, you know, to another stadium in Toronto, because I think the Toronto FC Stadium is about 20-odd thousand capacity, isn't it, which... You know, if they can
30,
get
30, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you never know. They might be ambitious enough to build up to that sort of potential support.
I think the key for them to do that is to get a major, major, major broadcast deal. They've obviously had, you know, to get Sean and Canada, and that's great. But if they can get a big, massive one that's going to give them top class coverage.
Mm.
I mean, they've been nailing that marketing side. I know they've been. Yeah, we've talked about it forever about how good they are at marketing, but the last month or so they have been getting a lot more traction, it looks like.
They've been getting great publicity within Toronto itself, and not the least of that is the fact that the other major Toronto sports teams, you know, the Blue Jays and Argonauts and so on, they've all been sort of wishing them good luck, haven't they? They're now accepted as a significant part of the Toronto sporting scene, which is tremendous. And apparently, you know, if you go to Toronto, everybody knows about the Wolfpack, which is quite incredible, isn't it, to be honest? And, you know, if you go to many northern rugby league towns that have major rugby league clubs, probably not everybody knows about them. You know, they've brought this marketing, what you might call a joie de vivre, French term. But they have, haven't they? They're, you know, everybody looks to be having fun. That's the great thing. They don't look miserable. They look as though it's great.
I've said it a million times. I'm bored of arguing about Toronto, to be honest. I've just got to the point where people who can't see that Toronto can bring anything to the game, I just can't be bothered dealing with them. But anyway.
Don't have any Canadians, Matt.
But do you know anyone who's been to Toronto, been to a Wolfpack game, and not come back and said it's brilliant?
Well, it's not just that. It's that, you know, a lot of people are going to be going to Toronto next year who might not be regular rugby league fans. Because my son-in-law is a great Hull FC fan, but my daughter is not that bothered. You know, she doesn't go to games normally. But on Sunday night, she was texting me saying, when are Hull playing in Toronto? I'm definitely going to go to that game, you know, because we want to see... You know, they've watched that game on TV. They see how great it looks. So that's the interesting thing. When something comes across on television as being a great experience, people want to go there.
Yeah.
People want to experience it for themselves. And that's what's happening with Toronto.
The reality is, and this will be unpopular, I might get some grief for this, but I'm not really bothered, to be honest.
I don't think you will, whatever you're going to say.
That protects the producer
as well. The people who are against Toronto are either jealous or scared of what it will do to their club.
Alex, I'm going to come to you for this bit, because Brian McDermott had a fiery post-match interview.
A good interview,
which is, you know, he highlighted the fact that, in his opinion, the direction rugby league should be travelling in is the Toronto model. You're obviously, you know, a Castleford fan. Who
am I?
Well, maybe.
Really? Shock revelation.
I know.
Exclusive on the tunnel.
Right. I'll come to you as well, Matthew, if you like, because you know Halifax.
Don't tell anyone.
Halifax.
But to bring it back to Brian McDermott's comment, though, and I will kind of disagree with him. Yes, the sport has to get into big cities, big commercial cities with blue chip sponsors, so agreed. But they can't do that without the platform that's been laid down for them by the Heartland clubs, and needs to be continued to be laid down.
Absolutely.
We're talking about how many Canadian players are going to be playing for Toronto. It's going to take...
Of course it will.
It took Melbourne 15 years to get one.
Exactly. So
you've got to start at the bottom and get kids playing it at school.
And that's where I was talking about the likes of Castleford, the likes of Halifax.
That's what Castleford and other towns offer, is that the kids, every kid plays rugby league in Castleford, everyone.
One of the things, though, about rugby league is that it's an easier game to, I think, for kids to learn than the other code of rugby. You know, and once kids in Canada start learning how to play rugby league, I think they'll learn it quite quickly, actually. And you never know, maybe in 10 or 15 years there will be some kids coming through.
Where there seems to be a gap in opinion, and this is where I sit, I kind of sometimes think I sit there alone. Some people seem to think that the game can only be cities. It has to be cities. Get rid of Batley, Dewsbury, Rochdale, Swinton, Maldon. And then you others say, we don't want anything off the M62. It's the M62 and the M62 only. The reality is, if these cities come in, yes, they might be successful. Yes, they might do this and they might do that. But financially, commercially, they will help these heartland clubs. And long term, there's no reason why they can't then compete with the big cities.
Exactly.
And that's what that's what people have to learn and accept.
And
but
that's what that would
can't.
Be one of the attractions, actually. You know, the small town versus big city thing. You know, Toronto v Featherstone is actually one of the great attractions of rugby league. The fact that, you know, a little village in West Yorkshire can actually travel out to Toronto, probably the fifth biggest city in North America. And play them on equal terms. I mean,
we do have that on a certain level already. You know, Castleford versus Leeds.
The one thing that I don't agree with Brian McDermott on, for sure, is his comment that non-heartline clubs should get more quota and more salary cap space. Reason being, if we're in franchise and there was no relegation, 100% get it. Grow the game, yada yada, 100%. But we're not in that position. We have promotion, relegation. You cannot have one club. London waiting, I agree with him, London should get London weight, but they don't spend up to cap anyway, so it's a bit of a non-argument this point, but I get his point. But you cannot have a position where Toronto are allowed 8, 9, 10 overseas players while the rest are allowed 5, because not when there's too much on the line to do that.
It goes back to what we're talking about that central funding and where it goes. The only money that should be going anywhere is to development offices and outside heartland areas.
Yeah, that's it'll go on. For some clubs, it'll go on bringing in another Aussie that'll cost.
But that sums up our game's short-sightedness.
And then but that'll be Toronto's fault.
That's just such short-sighted lack of planning.
But everyone looking forward to those loop fixtures in Toronto next season?
They won't do it, though.
So the teams that travel to
Toronto twice via loop fixtures will be playing, from what I can gather, on the road.
There'll only be three of them, won't there? Who have to travel twice.
From what I can gather, no team will travel to Toronto more than once.
Okie dokie. While Toronto are leaving the Championship this season, entering next year will be Oldham. Did anyone see this game, by the way?
I did.
It was absolutely amazing.
End to end, wasn't it?
It really was. The scoring sequence was superb. I think Newcastle in the lead twice in this game. Oldham getting promoted, though. What do we think?
Well, good for them. I mean, it's one of the great rugby league towns, isn't it, Oldham, that's sadly fallen away so badly in the last 20 or so years. Very disappointing for Newcastle, because Newcastle were, you know, desperate to get promotion to the Championship, and now they've got to do another year in League One. I would have thought they'd be the favourites to get promoted from League One next year. But, you know, great and interesting. Scott Naylor's last game in charge at Oldham. So, you know, obviously a great way to end his time with them.
Shame for Newcastle. Doing a lot of good things, and it would have been good to see him in the Championship, but I don't think you should let that spoil what's been a very good year for Oldham, really. You know, they deserve the crack. You know, how will they fare? It'll be tough. Be very tough.
It'll be tough for both them and Whitehaven going up. I mean, it's a tough competition, isn't it? And I think if Newcastle had gone up, they would have had the wherewithal to strengthen and protect themselves against relegation. Yeah. Oldham and Whitehaven, I'm not sure whether they will be able to do that.
It's interesting. Is there enough Cumbrian players, do you think, in Whitehaven?
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because
that'd be interesting.
If you're looking at the Championship next year and you're trying to call it, I wouldn't like to do that. I guess it's my job, but
it was interesting that on our league it had Old v Newcastle, obviously, but Old v New, which was quite interesting. But Oldham, like we said, they're a club who 40 years ago, obviously, were, you could consider them a bit of a heavyweight in the sport. Obviously, they're not there yet.
Well, they won the championship in 1958, I think it was, when they had a really great side.
But 1,200 there, out of nowhere, they double the crowd. And so it's like Salford, isn't it? You could see that the crowd are there.
That did include 200 from Newcastle Thunder. And I was talking to Mick Hogan on Sunday night after the game, and he was saying that away attendance, that away support of Newcastle Thunder, is bigger than they've ever had away support at Newcastle Falcons. You know, the rugby union fans just don't travel away, which is quite interesting, isn't it? It just sort of shows the difference between the fans of the two codes in a curious way.
What do we think then for Oldham, Whitehaven, obviously going to be in Championship next season? You said you don't want to call it, but I'm not having that, Alex. Come on. What can Oldham and Whitehaven mirror what York and, to a lesser extent, Bradford did, where they
can definitely have a go. And they won't be afraid of going into the Championship.
I mean, we'll come back to the Championship in a second, because we've got loads of things to talk about with regards to the Championship and some clubs in particular. But speaking of playoff finals, there was a plethora... There you go, you were doing French before, there's a bit of Latin for you, of them last weekend in the NCL. And for more on Wednesday afternoon, I caught up with League Express's Phil Hodgson. Phil, a big thank you for joining us. And, three grand finals last week in the NCL. We'll start off with the big one in the Premier Division. And it was a victory for West Hull.
It was, in highly dramatic circumstances. Again, you know, the National Conference League throws up its... fair share of drama in this particular game. Tato Heath, less than 24 hours after Salford had beaten Wigan, partly through two early penalties, or boosted by two early penalties, did much the same thing. Two penalties well within the first half hour by Bobby Goulding Jr., who's Bobby Goulding's lad, gave him a 4-0 lead. They were 8-6 up at half time, and it continued nip and tuck throughout the second half. And it finished at 14-all, both sides trying field goals and missing out on them. And West Hull won the toss. They got an early penalty in golden point time and chose to run the ball, which I think took Fatouif a little bit by surprise. Went down the flank, and Matty Plummer scored within, I think it was about 90 seconds of golden point, scored in the left-hand corner, and that was it. Tremendous, you know, so West Hull won it from second spot. Fatworth came, I think, fourth. A big crowd at Featherstone Rovers, actually, the old Daniel Fisher Stadium. I think there was about best part of 2,000 people there. Were treated to a thriller in that game. Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And commiserations to Fat O'Heath, but it's been a great season for them anyway, with the Challenge Cup run and all that. But West Hull kind of makes up for last season's defeat in the final.
Yeah, it was difficult last season. They lost to Hunslet Club Park side, who were unbeaten all year 12 months ago. But it was their third, or maybe even fourth, I think it was the third narrow defeat against Hunslet Club Park side, you know, and it was a little bit difficult to take for them. But they've regrouped. I mean, they've always been a strong side, West Hull, and Mark Hewitt, the head coach, said that they learned a few lessons from it. And came up trumps, but having said that, the game could have gone either way, and Tato Heath were a great credit to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to West Hull winning that one in the grand final, the NCL. There were some promotion playoff finals as well elsewhere, and congratulations to Featherstone Lions and commiserations to Stanningley. But Featherstone won 23 points to 10, also at Featherstone Rovers at the weekend, and Featherstone Lions going up.
Yeah, Featherstone Lions, I think we might have touched on this a week or two ago. They were rather unlucky not to go up in the first place as one of the top two, especially when they won the last game 56-12, I think it was, at Mine, but York Acorn snatched second spot by beating Dewsbury Moor 88-0. So what impressed me about Featherstone Lions is that Jamie Rooney, their head coach, told me that after the win at Mine, when they thought they'd cracked it, and then they go in the changing rooms and find out that they'd not been promoted after all, and they said it was not for six by that, you know, it was in a state of shock. But he said to his players, this gives you a chance to play in the final. And that they did. And although the score was 23-10, that doesn't really tell you the story of this game. Stanley were, well, took it almost as close as Fatou Heath did, really. Stanley were in front at half-time, 10-6, and then Patterson came back 12-10 in front, and then as the game went into the final quarter, Ian Jackson, really good goal kicker, got another penalty, 14-10. And that was how it stayed until 9 minutes from time. Then they got a long-range try by Jake Perkins, made it 18-10 with 9 minutes left. Then with 5 minutes left, Gaz Gale, who's going to New Zealand later this month with the Community Lions. Gaz got try 5 minutes from time. There were with seconds to go, Jackson landed a field goal, 23-10. Featherstone Lions deserve to be in the Premier Division. I think they'll make an impact, but Stanley, very unfortunate to miss out. Then the other playoff final, and these third place playoff games are pretty good, actually, because, you know, they reward teams that are in form towards the end of the season with promotion. And the Division 3 promotion finals between Youth and Dewsbury Celtic. I rather fancied Youth to win this, and I think Youth probably did when they went 10-0 up. But from that point, Celtic rode back, and I think they're celebrating their 130th anniversary this year. Two clubs of high pedigree here, but Celtic came back. They went 28-10 in front. Youth got a try and a goal, made it 28-16 to give them a bit of a chance. But then Celtic sealed that one with a penalty by George Senior. So 30-16 to Dewsbury Celtic. And I think it'll be interesting to see how they fare. They, incidentally, it's not been a great year in the heavy woolen area, or in Dewsbury anyway, for teams in the conference. Dewsbury more relegated from Division 1, Thornhill relegated from the Premier Division, and Shawcross relegated from Division 2. So Celtic have booked that trend in Dewsbury, so they're enjoying the beer somewhere anyway.
Well, yeah, a big congratulations to Dewsbury Celtic, and happy birthday as well, incidentally. Phil, thanks for walking us through those NCL finals. Just a quick mention for the tiers below the conference. Obviously, the North West Men's League had their various finals this past week as well. We should also mention the fact the Pennine League is now underway.
Yeah, the Pennine League has been played for a couple of weeks now, started towards the end of September. So they'll be continuing to provide entertainment throughout the winter. They've got three divisions in place. And another area of the game that might interest listeners is the student and college game. The college team started a week or two ago. They play on Wednesday afternoons, weather permitting, looking outside. But that's something, you know, anybody who's free on a Wednesday afternoon and fancies watching a little bit of rugby, look in the League Express at the fixtures, you know, and you can pick somewhere out to watch some college rugby league. And from next week, I think it is, the student game itself is kicking in. So there's plenty of action throughout the winter to enjoy.
Phil Hodgson there, speaking to us here on the Total Rugby League Show. Some bits and bobs before we go. There's a lot of talking points outside of results on the field.
Here we go. Pretty interesting.
Yes. Now, where should we start? Firstly, Magic Weekend is going back to Newcastle.
Good.
Yeah, thank goodness for that. I believe the clubs overruled the Super League chief executive, didn't they, on this one?
That's the word.
Robert was supposedly wanted to go back to Liverpool, but the clubs wanted to go to Newcastle.
Well, I don't think... I was sceptical about Anfield at home. Hands up to that. I didn't think it was as bad as it would be. I don't think it was bad, really. But for me, I just think that Magic Weekend has a spiritual home at Newcastle at the minute. People love it being up there, and I think until that magic goes, pun intended, we should stay there.
I don't think it will go. I mean, people like going to Newcastle. I mean, the key factor is that the stadium is in the middle of the city and Liverpool's isn't. I mean, Liverpool's are great. If Anfield was in the middle of Liverpool, it'd be just as good. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But you know, Newcastle is, and it's just got that advantage.
I still think it should have been Dublin. I would have liked that. That would have been
It would be great to go to Dublin. It
really
it?
Would. But anyway, never mind. Maybe a couple of years' time. NRL Grand Final, then, Alex. What does this mean? Eh? This well, little wavy arm business.
For those listening, Ben is doing the call to signify six again.
Explain to us what happened. What the controversy was.
Well, Chant Whiten has the ball.
Hang on. Everyone's seen it. We don't need to. What happened is the referee messed up.
Which one?
That's what happened. Referees messed up.
Well, I'm a big believer in backing all the referees, but in this one, it's hard to be honest, because not only if he makes that call, stick with it. If it's wrong, fine. No one cares, really. But the fact that he's changed it is something...
And the players played in accordance with his original call.
Which they would do, obviously, because you've seen the call. You don't look at the referee again, do you? Because you've seen the call, you play on.
And it's worse as well, because they were tied at that point. It was
The Raiders were looking good. But
and then they scored.
But obviously that point didn't lead directly to those points. The Raiders had a full set of six to defend.
The problem is...
So you can't blame the referee on those points.
What seems to be being ignored is the fact that the earlier controversy, where the kick was charged down, hit the Roosters' trainer, and they got the head and feet, which I am informed is the rule, but it's an absolute nonsense rule, by the way.
Well, so that's not the referee's fault,
is it? No, that's not. I'm not blaming the ref for that one. But Whitehead would have certainly got to the ball first. Would he have got to the line? Probably not. He'd have probably been caught up. But still, the Roosters then force a dropout, score after that.
Yeah.
So two major... Well, I don't even think the second one's a major call. It's just, that is just a major mistake.
That he changed it. Yeah. I've never seen a ref change his mind on a pitch.
I mean, there is an audio...
That's absolutely... Yeah. Only when he's had video...
Yeah, absolutely. Interruption. Absolutely.
I mean, there is an audio recording of the referee changing his mind and about 10 seconds of him shouting.
As I said, Whiten has seen the call. He doesn't need to look at a ref again because he's never seen a referee change his mind.
No.
So you just play on. And then when he got up and was told to hand the ball over, he thought, am I being tricked here? Because you gave 6-6 again.
I think the Raiders have been admirably restrained in criticising the referee.
Well, they just, that press conference, they just weren't commenting on it. And to be fair, Ricky Stewart said some decent things, really.
Yeah.
That's the sad thing, is that we're here talking about this, whereas in reality, we should have been talking about that Viking clap at the start, which was brilliant, goosebumps and all that. The Roosters did very well to win because the Raiders were on at them for the entire... The Raiders were onto them for that entire second half, and they managed to deal with it and win.
I suspect if you look at the stats of the game, I've not done this yet, but I suspect the stats will all be in favour of the Raiders.
Yeah, they will be. They will. But as I say, the Roosters' achievement, first time in 26 years someone has won back-to-back
since
Premierships.
The Broncos. Yeah.
And that's an amazing achievement, but we're not talking about that, are we?
No.
One
of them things, isn't it? An advert for having one ref?
Well, it
depends what the conversation between the two was.
Whether eye contact, didn't it?
Whether Cummins has made his call, someone else has told him. But then the linesman can talk to him as well. So that's not as much of an issue either.
I'm not sure that in itself is suggests that we only ought to have one referee. But I'm just worried. If people think that by having two referees, you're automatically going to get better decisions. That just illustrates that that's not true, not necessarily true.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I don't think it's worth spending a lot more money having more referees, because all you do is actually just make everything more controversial when they get things wrong. It's a bit like having the video referee. When the video referee gets something wrong, it becomes even more controversial, doesn't it?
I think the NRL this year has been really, really poor in how it has... reflected on its referees. They have this Monday press conference where they bring up all the errors that they make and publish them, and it's just bizarre. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Why are you saying we made this error, we did this, and it's all wrong? It's just bizarre. Why are you doing that?
It is ridiculous, isn't it?
It leaves them open for when they actually get something really wrong, that everyone comes on to them really, and that's what's happened.
Yeah.
No one was talking about anything else.
Yeah.
It might as well have been an under-7s game, because no one cared about the fact that the NRL was won by the Roosters. Everyone cared about this referee.
Oh, absolutely.
There we go. Let's talk about the Bradford Bulls then. I know, only briefly. Up for sale. We think this sale's going to go through soon.
Friday. There's a meeting on Friday. Should be.
You understand. Where do the Bradford Bulls go from here, really?
I have no idea. It's a short.
Because I think everyone recognises that a healthy Bradford Bulls means a healthy rugby league, and
Well,
same goes for every club then there.
Yeah.
But Bradford, you know, was a big club. I hate to say it, but we've got to get out of this idea now that Bradford are a huge mammoth global brand. Mm. They're not anymore. They're not. In fact, what that club stands for now is completely different to Bullmania. When all this came out about the pension payments, when it came to like that players are trying to terminate the contracts, what were all your reactions? I'll tell you what mine was.
Here we go again.
Here we go again is a fair one. Mine was roll my eyes.
Mm.
Did it surprise you? Did it surprise any of you? No, it didn't. I assume.
But the thing is, that's all well and good, but what's going to happen in the future? You know, and how is the club going to be protected? I mean, until we see what happens on Friday, it's difficult to know what is going to happen.
Yes, a couple of weeks ago, we were reporting the Swinton Lions stuff as well, and you mentioned the Supporters Trust hadn't come out and said anything. That's changed now, hasn't it? They've had a meeting, and Stephen Wells come out and said, you know, there's optimism in the air and that kind of thing. I mean, best wishes to both sets of supporters, because they're the most important people.
Absolutely.
In all this,
yeah. Ben, that's one of the most sensible things you've said all year. I agree.
Good. Right towards the end of the show, the series as well. Great. There's a new chair of the RFL board as well, Simon Johnson.
Yeah, I have nothing against that. Speaks well about the game, speaks eloquently.
Certainly an eloquent guy, and a very positive guy, I think. I mean, you know, I interviewed him for our paper this week, and I mean, he was very careful not to get drawn into any controversial areas. But you know, as a first interview that we've done with him, I thought he was pretty good. We've also got two new RFL board directors as well, which is quite interesting.
Yep.
You know, so. We'll see where the RFL goes from here.
Let's hope. And look, this is no criticism of them. This is just a general observation. Let's hope that they seem to be doing things.
I was going to say, the role itself, it's
not very clear what the role is. It's fairly clear what the role of the chairman is, I think. And I mean, other people involved in the game have told me that Simon Johnson is a very effective chair of meetings, you know, and more so than perhaps Brian Barwick was, you know, when he was involved. But I'm not quite sure. We've always found with RFL board members that they're always incredibly reluctant to speak to any media, and it's always incredibly difficult to find out what it is they do. And the trouble is, what you tend to be told is that they've got these rather abstract skills, you know, in this, that or the other. And that will ultimately benefit the game in the long run. I hope it does. I hope it's absolutely right. But it would be interesting to speak to them directly and find out how they see it.
You can see that interview, read that interview around in League Express, which was out on Monday. But I'm imagining there'll also be an online edition on TotalRL.com.
It's on the website as well.
And just before we go as well, congratulations to Nigeria, who defeated Morocco in the MEA Championship final last week. We obviously heard from Nigerian Rugby League when that was all kicking off early in the season. And well, there you go. Congratulations.
And Sadiq Adebayi, London Broncos number 13 this year, was the captain of Nigeria and led them to that great win, which is great for him. Congratulations to Sadiq. I think it's great when you see players like him, who have obviously got a heritage with a country like Nigeria or some other, who actually goes back and helps the game develop in their ancestors' backyard, so to speak. That's just, I think, you know, it shows how selfless these guys are.
Yeah, absolutely. TotalRL.com, the place to go for all the latest news. And the main headline on there at the moment is Ralph Rimmer in talks with Sky for the Championship. And before we go, just a quick mention for that, really. The last time we got excited about TV coverage and the Championship, we scared off a broadcaster. So
we haven't scared off that broadcaster. I ain't taking responsibility for breaking that story. That's talk's still ongoing.
Because it's proven certainly the last month or so, there's an appetite for Championship Rugby League, especially on a Sunday night.
I
don't say that, though. Don't say Sunday night.
I think, I will hate it because Mugginsy will be the one who's expected to stay late and write the report night.
Think of the printers, everyone. Think of the printers.
But it is a good slot. It is a good slot.
I mean, they could potentially take over the Thursday slot, so I'm hearing, on a new contract. But although that wouldn't be all that popular with, you know, part-time players, I don't suppose.
I think Sunday half, rather than half six, if they got in at half five, that'd be good.
Half five.
Because, well, my logic
being... Straight after yeah, well, Sunday football.
Well,
and...
well not just not just that, but, you know, people have gone to their game on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Go on, so, watch it.
Well, one or two things. The clubs can make the most of it. Think, oh, stay around, have a and they can get bar takings because people will stay and watch the games. Half six is a bit long to hang around, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it would, and then better for us. Probably better for the players because they don't want to. Half six is a bit late and they probably don't work in the morning. And
yeah,
I just think everyone wins all around if they could get an half five slot.
There we go. Hope you're listening. The people negotiating that anyway. But just before we go, back chat. On Thursday, it's a good one.
Series finale.
Oh, heck.
Martin, Craig Harrison, who's just Craig Harrison as ever, and James Clare, who was very good as well. Good show, serious debate, some humour in there as well.
Craig Harrison had some very interesting observations on Ian Watson, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
The Salford coach, which if you're a...
Not head coach of the year.
I know, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, you know, Justin Holbrook, great coach, I mean, you've got to say. And maybe that just gives a bit of extra motivation to Salford to show them what's what on Saturday.
Kind of split. I'm kind of split on that though.
Holbrook must have done amazing things to beat Watson. Put it that way.
Well, but it's because of when the voting takes place? This was August.
Look. Both coach had phenomenal seasons.
Mm.
In my opinion, and this is me sitting on the fence, the coach of the year should be is actually the coach that wins the grand final, and that's the way to split.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
That's right. These awards are given out too early, actually, aren't they?
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But
that's my take on it.
That's right. But certainly worth watching back chat to listen
out,
to
out of interest. Do the playoff games count on the Man of Steel?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, that's all right. So I was just thinking about this. Because if they'd have done it last week and it was really close going into the grand final, what would have happened? You know, could the award be winner on the night?
Well, we should congratulate Justin Hastings. He's a very, very worthy winner, wasn't
he? Oh, great. Yeah, absolutely.
Alex, just before we go, nowhere now, our coverage the next week. But what are you mean time preparing for October's Rugby League World?
Starts helping me out on the website. He helps me on the website.
There's a World Cup Nines coming up. Not this weekend.
Oh, yeah, of course there is.
What days of the week are they played?
It's Saturday, Sunday. No, Friday, Saturday, is it?
Brilliant.
Or Saturday, Sunday, one of the two.
So you'll be covering that?
Two Wednesdays.
Yes, I think it's 19th, 20th, so that's the Friday, Saturday.
Excellent. And Martin, League Express out on Monday, wall-to-wall coverage of the grand final, I'd imagine.
Yes, of course, yeah, we're all going to be there doing our bit. So, you know, that's the place to come for all the news about it, I think.
And just before we go, just a quick round the table. Who's winning the grand final, everybody? Matthew?
Salford by 10.
St Helens.
I've not got a
you know,
horse in this race.
I figured out that someone actually listens to this podcast.
God, I'm glad. Thank God. It's not just me.
I got a tweet after Salford won the semi final and says, "Fair play, Matt Shaw. He's been predicting this since about June." I'm like, "Well, yeah,
it's true."
So I've got to stick with him now, haven't I? I've got to say that Salford.
I think it'll only be Saints by 4. I think it'll be really close.
Okie dokie. Well, that's the end for the Total Rugby League show this week. A big thank you to Martin Sadler.
Thank you.
Alex Davis.
Thank you.
Matthew Shaw.
Pleasure.
Phil Hodgson as well, and Lorraine Marsden. Big thanks for coming on the show too. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.